Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutade Srimati Bhaktivedanta Swaminite Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvasesa Sunyavadi Paschacha Desitarine Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Srivas Adi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Om Agina Tiramandasya, Gina Gina, Salakaya, Saksura Midatamena, Tasmai Suri Garave Namaha. So I'll be speaking today, fifth discussion, on my experiences of being with Srila Prabhupada, that hopefully, by the grace of Sri Sri Radha Gopinath, Lalita Vishaka, can come into print in a book entitled Captured by Love, The Agonies and Ecstasies of an Aspiring Servant. So I try to share with you the experience of being with the person Bhagavata. The conception of coming to Krishna consciousness or approaching Bhagawan, as in Bhagavatam, is facilitated and through the essential association of the person Bhagavata. I've been reading the book of Shruti Kirti Prabhu, somewhat similar experiences as I had, naturally. But everybody experiences Krishna in different ways. And everyone experiences the spiritual master, especially our founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada, in different ways. We last were discussing my agony that I was put in by Srila Prabhupada preventing me from cooking from him. And when Mataji, very well-meaning, cooked for him, and Srila Prabhupada humbly accepted what was presented to him, but tore my heart when she left and pronounced that everything was practically inedible. This was in Anandiketan, which is somewhat near the Delhi airport in New Delhi. It's quite a nice neighborhood, rich persons and many persons who also worked for international governments, embassies, and the Russian government, private and enterprises as well. Did I tell the story of Boris and Alex? The two persons who worked for the Communist Party, I think it is. Yes, okay. About this time, right after the festival at Tokatora Gardens, we had the deities, Radha Partasarathi, who had presided over the function. And we discussed with Srila Prabhupada that after the festival we should install these deities. So I'm just going to give a very brief description of the installation and talk about installing deities and the rituals of the Vedas and how Srila Prabhupada dealt with them. This is not meant to be an extensive description. But basically there was Jamuna and my wife Madhira, Srila Prabhupada and myself, and the deities. And we really couldn't do very much, the four of us. One was reading Bhagavad Brahma Samhita, one was reading from Bhagavad Gita, and one was helping Srila Prabhupada bathe the deities. I actually do not recall, even if we had a fire, and it was as simple as you can imagine. And at the end of this very elegant ceremony, which Srila Prabhupada officiated, giving the prana prashista to Radha Pratasarati, he told us their names. Jamuna, Mataji asked Srila Prabhupada, what are their names? Radha Pratasarati. So for us, perhaps being stupid disciples, or for us, perhaps relishing just whatever came out of Srila Prabhupada's lips as being perfect, we were so charmed to hear this name, Radha Pratasarati, and it quite fit for being Delhi, because Pratasarati, Arjuna, this is his stomping ground. And it never occurred to us to ask any question, but later on it became quite a bit of debate, and Gaudiya Math, as they almost always do, criticizing Srila Prabhupada for giving the name. At that time, one of Srila Prabhupada's very old disciple, his name was Ishan Prabhu, came to Delhi, and Ishan Prabhu had a little bit weak-minded person, and his wife Vibhavati, who was very gentle, he asked if he could stay and do some service, and I said yes, of course. I was very happy to have such a nice association. He was very humble and meek and worked very hard without complaint. And he would talk to me about questions he had in his mind, especially about his service. And I had an idea of how to answer him. I had an intuition, but since Srila Prabhupada was coming, I thought, well, why not let Srila Prabhupada direct him, because there are the ones who joined in the movement originally, many of us got, Ishan Prabhu, I think, joined in San Francisco or New York. They had personal direction from Srila Prabhupada, so there was a particular attachment for that. And Srila Prabhupada came in February, and Ishan Prabhu went, and I went with him to meet Srila Prabhupada. And he proposed to Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, I'm not certain what I should be doing now in Krishna consciousness. What can I do? And Prabhupada looked at him, gazed at him for a while, looked him in the eyes, and said something which is going to be valuable for all of us. You have a brain. Use it. So we have both things, that we should definitely cooperate with Srila Prabhupada's arrangement of a GBC and GBC, the ISKCON committee and the temple presidents and that structure. But at the same time, for our individual initiative, we must have that. It must come out of our heart. And Ishan Prabhu was the one who made these Balaram Madangas, he was the one who finally made them nicely. You know the Balaram Madangas? The fiberglass, unbreakable Madanga. Some are just passing comments, because of the limited time, that I wanted to share with you as much as possible. And I have 60 notes for today's class, which is only half of them. Srila Prabhupada was sitting and discussing about problems, and he said, Krishna always takes the bright side. This was in May of 1974. It was beginning to get hot, and Srila Prabhupada was on a short visit in which he was going to discuss with Acharya Prabhakar, our center. Srila Prabhupada asked me, how do you find the weather these days? So when we discussed with Srila Prabhupada, we're not always sure what we're supposed to answer. So I said, Srila Prabhupada, it's very hot, but in the service of Krishna, we tolerate. He said, Srila Prabhupada said, no, I didn't mean that. Is it unbearable? So I had given the wrong answer, thinking that, whether I was suffering from the heat. this goes on, he's going to discuss with me in a short while on his next visit about the heat. Srila Prabhupada was residing in Vrindavan, and I would go into his room and talk with him, and there had been various problems with brahmacharis and unmarried Western women. We're talking about Indian brahmacharis, but not just Indian brahmacharis. One sannyasi, Devananda, had wound up, it's a little bit of problem, didn't really mature, but it became a little bit of a problem with one of the Matajis in Jaipur. And so Srila Prabhupada was talking about this problem, and I was alone with him. He says, something has to be done about this. You should send a telegram to Jayatirtha ordering that all of the women, unmarried women in India, should leave, and he should arrange for their accommodation. So I had thought about this as soon as he said it. Why would Jayatirtha accept a telegram from me? And Srila Prabhupada said, and do not mention my name. I do not want to become known as a woman hater. But you should remember the talk I had about these women will take you back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada was not a woman hater. So it was quite a... Prabhupada didn't mind me being known as the woman hater. I got a lot of brunt of... in the agonies of the ecstasies of serving Prabhupada. I had the enjoyment of taking the brunt of everyone said Tejas is somehow conspired with Jayatirtha to have us all leave India. So Srila Prabhupada introduced me to Acharya Prabhakar. He explained that he had lived with him in Jhansi when he started the League of Devotees. They used to talk all day in Sanskrit. At the same time, Srila Prabhupada said that in all of India, perhaps in the world, there is no greater scholar in Sanskrit than Acharya Prabhakar. So indirectly I understood that Srila Prabhupada was telling me that he was the greatest scholar in India because he could freely converse with the greatest scholar in Sanskrit. Prabhupada had written a long letter and I got a copy. There's actually several letters, but for lack of time I'm not going to read them. You can check in the Vedabase. Very lovely letters of Prabhupada's first disciple, Acharya Prabhakar, who came with very long hair. Kind of, he wasn't a hippie, but you know, very stylish yogi type of hair. And he had discussions with Srila Prabhupada. So I took the clue that I should try to encourage Acharya Prabhakar. And we had this hall, as I mentioned. And I would, just like we have our festivals, I would call people, important people in Delhi, and advertise that Acharya Prabhakar, because he's a very famous speaker and very well known. The Shankara Math of India actually awarded him as the Acharya of their math, even though he's a Vaishnav, because he's so expert in the philosophy. He was the head of a university and so I thought it would be good. Let him give the introduction, and I would speak. That seemed to be working nicely. Two, 3 months later in August, I met Srila Prabhupada, and when I would meet him, the first thing he would say, he said, after I would do my obeisances, and he would say, "What news, Tejas?" So I mentioned the news, and I mentioned that I was encouraging Acharya Prabhakar by having him give introductions to my talks. And Prabhupada looked at me, and he says, "No, do not let him speak. He is not following. You are following little. Therefore, when you speak, there is some potency." Prabhupada explained about all these persons who were professional reciters and they would speak, but they were not following a spiritual master or Sampradaya. Basically, it was useless. On one of those days in Vrindavan, I was sitting with Srila Prabhupada while he was taking his lunch, Most persons were not, Prabhupada had most persons go during his lunch. I didn't realize it so much, but when I'm reading Shruti Kirti's book, I realize it. And I would come in when he would eat, because he ordered me that whenever I had time I would sit, but I wouldn't talk to him when he would take his meal. I would just sit there and not look at what he was doing, but because I came in, I didn't feel like going out. That would also be awkward. Sometimes I left. So I was sitting him, and he was towards the end of his meal, and Bhakti Kishori came in. And Bhakti Kishori, from the very beginning, I mentioned her relationship in London. And sometimes she would come and sit on Srila Prabhupada's lap. He'd be sitting there, even during a program, she'd just come in and sit on the lap. And I mentioned about the Krishna deity. So this time she came in and just, she stood just next to Prabhupada, wordlessly. And Prabhupada had just finished his meal and washed his hand on the plate. And he reached out and started to rub her head. And Bhakti Kishori just stood there with her eyes closed, and Prabhupada rubbed her face and then rubbed her back. It was amazing to see the beauty of their relationship, how much Prabhupada has an ocean of love to give with the disciples. His job was to chastise them, and wanted us to keep a respectful distance, but was affectionate in more subtle ways, as we're describing the ecstasy. And with the women, he was more overtly affectionate, but very proper always. Even with his sister, he'd drive her out of the room. And he would never talk alone with any woman. If there was a Matiji coming, there had to be a brahmachari. And but with the children, he gave full throttle love and affection. Srila Prabhupada wasn't feeling well. This is September of 74. Shruti Kirti Prabhu writes a lot about this in his diary. Srila Prabhupada was hardly eating. So his sister, Pichima, somehow got to know me from Calcutta, and she'd seen me. And she grabbed me by my kurta one day. And I didn't understand Bengali as much as whatever Hindi words there were. And she didn't understand any Hindi at all. She could hardly understand it when I'd speak to her in Hindi. But she grabbed me, and somehow we communicated with each other. She was really concerned. This was her unending concern, that her poor brother wasn't eating. You know, like a mother, you know. There are certain places in India, like Italy, you go, and if you don't eat, they go crazy, you know. Eat, 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 you know. So Bengali mother, of all the mothers in India, the Bengali mother is like the most famous for loving her son, and the sister loving the brother. And so she just was like dying that her brother wasn't eating, although she'd sometimes cook and he couldn't eat it. So she was conspiring, what will her brother love to eat? And so she dragged me in the kitchen, and she concluded that he would love to eat shukta, which is like the Bengali creme de resistance, huh? Is the, you know, shukta. You know, it's like everyone loves shukta, every Bengali. So she had me actually make the shukta. So I was supposed to not cook for Prabhupada, it was his order. But since his sister was cooking, so I was putting all the things in under her direction. And then Srila Prabhupada ate, and he ate a lot of it. So we were both really happy. But in the evening, he started getting very upset and saying, she cooked to try to kill me. So I don't know who is more, you know, in fright, Pichima or myself. And then Srila Prabhupada got sick, actually, for the next day. He couldn't eat. So there, again, cooking for Srila Prabhupada. I was sitting with Prabhupada, and he would motion me always, not always, but often, to come and sit next to him. And I liked that vantage point, to be able to see Srila Prabhupada from the side at the same time to see everybody in the room, and I'd watch Srila Prabhupada look at everybody. And then, and as he would talk, he would look around the room. And at that time, his room was rectangular, and he was sitting on the long side, against at the end of the wall, opposite Kitty Corner, the entranceway. And the room was packed. And when Mataji came in, she must have been in her late 40s, very threadbare sari, and she probably was a Bengali, by the way she looked, her complexion. And in her hand, she had a marigold. It's like the most common, cheapest flower you can have in India. And she probably picked it from just outside of the room. And she was holding it up in her hand as if she was offering it, and it was between her eyes and what she could see of Srila Prabhupada. And as soon as she walked in the room, I was observing Srila Prabhupada looked at her, and he looked at that marigold. And he was continuing speaking about Krishna consciousness, but every few seconds, Prabhupada would look around the room, and his eye would go back, and he would look at that marigold, and he'd look at that marigold, and then look at the Mataji, and then he'd go back to talking. But his eyes would always return to that marigold. And I was really wondering what was Prabhupada's fixation on that marigold. It was intense. So the Mataji slowly made her way to the very front. And after this long session, 3-4 minutes, handed that marigold to Srila Prabhupada, who brought it to his nose and inhaled very deeply. He closed his eyes as he inhaled. And the expression on his face was as if he had smelled ambrosia, total nectar. And he had such an expression of peacefulness and joy on his face. And he looked, the Mataji was doing her obeisances, and she got up. And he said, "Thank you very much." So Srila Prabhupada exemplified gratitude, the most meager thing, but because it was offered with great desire. Always getting in trouble, Srila Prabhupada was suspecting one of his disciples of taking money from the Didi collection. And I'm not mentioning his name, and the point is not to find out who he is. And Srila Prabhupada was suspicious of this devotee, who was an older devotee, and his wife, taking the money. And he had written to them and had discussed with them, and he called me and he said, "Now you should start to investigate what this devotee is doing and give me reports." So I'll come to that. Jamuna and my wife were in the room with Srila Prabhupada, and Lalita and Vishakha, because there was Radhashyama Sundar, who didn't have names at that time, and Lalita and Vishakha, and they needed a place to store, and we had very little place to store where we could properly keep the deity, so they were keeping Lalita and Vishakha in Prabhupada's room during this time period. And they would come in and do the fittings of the dresses, and Srila Prabhupada was looking at them. They were just, you know, trying to, you know, Jamuna was more bold around Srila Prabhupada, and Madhira, my wife, she was a little more self-conscious, and Prabhupada was looking at Lalita and Vishakha, and looking at Madhira and Jamuna. Then he told Jamuna, "You look like Vishakha," and he told Madhira, "You look like Lalita." Prabhupada was, yeah, we were struggling to get cement and steel. I won't discuss it much for the lack of time, but everything to get done, anything in India, even those who organized big corporations knew that nothing was easy. You could not just go out and buy cement and steel. You had to get a permit, and you have to go again and again and again, and everybody in the pipeline tried to delay it. Generally, they were expecting bribes, but because we were sadhus and Westerners, we really couldn't do it, and the person who was supposed to give the permit actually handed it to the deputy secretary, who wouldn't move it out, and then finally we'd go and follow up again. The peon, I was in a room once, and the peon actually literally threw the file in the face of the deputy director. He just threw it in his face, and he couldn't do anything, because if he fired the guy, there would be a strike. He just wouldn't move it because I didn't give him a bribe, 5 rupees. Where would I get it from? And then also they'll say, you know, you're treating Indians in an inferior way. You think you have to, you can bribe us, so you could never win. Anyway, this is a big struggle. And so the temple was being delayed. And my wife was there in Vrindavan, but she was supposed to come back to Delhi. Prabhupada was always very concerned about us. So he was asking me what was wrong in the marriage. If you remember, I had spoken in a previous class about my sannyas fiasco, which I really hadn't wanted to take sannyas, but I was being pressured, and to get the sannyasis off my back, I agreed to it. But my wife and I did not get along. She would, in front of everyone, quarrel with me all the time, and I would just not speak back. And then she wanted this and that, and it was very difficult to give her. And mostly she just wanted to quarrel. It was hard to figure out, and I'm not very adept at it. And most men, they're not very adept when women like to quarrel with them anyway, but that was her nature. So Srila Prabhupada was counseling me, and Gurudas was in the room. Gurudas was a bit of a busybody, and Jamuna and Gurdas would kind of meddle with my relationship with my wife, probably well-meaning, because she would come to them and complain about me, and then they tried to pacify her and say, well, you know, yeah, he's bad, but still go back to him. And Prabhupada wanted, and what do you do? It's hard to get involved between a husband and wife, and they would. So, and if they didn't, then she'd become upset, so you don't win. So Srila Prabhupada got involved because he wanted my wife to come back to Delhi and help me. So he was talking to me and talking to my wife and then talking to me again. And he said that he gave me good advice. He says, you should be more agreeable with her. Don't disagree right away. Just listen to her and be agreeable with her. So his meaning was, not that I should never give in to her, but not that I should give in to her all the time, but just to, you know, spend a little more time listening, and then if I couldn't do it, to say it a little bit more indirectly. So Gurudas was there, and Gurudas is very emotional and expressive and liked to get into things, especially things that could be sizzling. And I saw him, you know, as I was talking to Prabhupada, he jumped up and ran out of the room, and I had an idea what was going to happen. So by the time I left through the Prabhupada's room, just outside of the room, my wife was there pacing back and forth and back and forth. She said, I have to talk to you at once. I went with her a little aside, and she says, I know what Srila Prabhupada told you. Srila Prabhupada told you that whatever I say, you have to do. So it was like, you know, it just went the total opposite direction. Because then what do you do as, you know, a person? I'm a little more passive, and my wife was a little more, not aggressive, but more excitable, Italian blood. So she refused. She said, I'm not coming to Delhi. I'm not coming to Delhi. And he says, you're not going to agree with me, and I'm not going to go. So Prabhupada expected her to go, and we had a car for Srila Prabhupada, in which he had asked me to sit with him, and then another car, which was the one behind, and he had expected Madhura to get in. And just as we, you know, Srila Prabhupada sat in the car, and I sat in the car, and the door was closed, he says, where is Madhura? And I said, she said that she's not going to come. He says, no, she agreed to come. He says, you send a message that if she doesn't go to Delhi, I'm not going to Delhi. Gandhi and Prabhupada, Gandhi and Satyagraha. So actually, she was actually nearby, hovering around, hoping that Prabhupada wouldn't do this. And she actually had her bags packed, because she would never not give in to Prabhupada, but she was just hoping that Prabhupada might forget about it. Then she could stay in her Vrindavan, which I didn't hold it against her. We were having a lot of trouble in the Ananiketan place. There's at one time 25 devotees staying there who absolutely refused to do anything. And I had a temple commander who was really good, a German devotee who was 6'6", and he looked like, you know, really fierce. But he had a gentle face but the tiniest eyes, and he could make himself look really fierce, but he was like a really gentle. And as long as he was around, after the revolution against me, I kept him as my bodyguard. But when people were behaving, he was the temple commander, and nobody disobeyed him. He didn't have to say anything. It was nice, actually. It was one of my less agonizing times in Delhi. But he left, and then different contingents of devotees just freeloaded. They would not do anything. They didn't contribute, and they just sit around and gossip. And Prabhupada mentioned this, just sitting around. Prabhupada was one of Prabhupada's pet peeves. Whenever he'd hear it, see devotees just talking nonsense, gossiping, talking about other, and that's what they did. You know, and then go shopping. And so it got to be really difficult, and it wasn't working out. So I proposed to Srila Prabhupada that we should move. And it was also far from the center of Delhi. So I would have to go double distance very often, because the morning I would go to houses, and I was spending so much time and not able to have enough time for preaching, and no one would stay and continue collecting. They'd all run away after a few days. They didn't want to take responsibility and endure the difficulties. Even the sannyasis would leave. They complain. We had different sannyasis stay, and I'd arrange preaching programs for them and an assistant, and they didn't want to go out preaching. They'd sit there and just complain. So I'm not good at this, and so I thought, let me make the ashram so small that people couldn't hang around. It's the solution. Make it right in the center of Delhi. So I found a place in Bengali Market, the same place we had started from before, and was trying to get Prabhupada's permission. And I was concerned about it, but Srila Prabhupada sent a telegram that, because I couldn't get a big enough place, and there was a lot of delay in communication, so very nice places slipped away, and I needed to get out of there. And Srila Prabhupada sent a telegram, preaching primary, my staying secondary. So that really bothered me, that I didn't really mean that for Srila Prabhupada to feel that way. We moved. And I was hoping that still I would get Srila Prabhupada to stay. So even though it was really tiny ashram, it was half the size of this room. Everything, including, I think I mentioned this yesterday, last time, including Radha Pratisarati's altar, Prabhupada's room, a brahmachari room, a kitchen, a little hall. That was the size of everything. So Prabhupada's room was quite long, but very narrow. And when he came, I was for about 10 days trying to get a carpenter to put an inside lock on the door. And I had been a carpenter before. I actually used to teach carpentry and been a maintenance man for 100 cottages. So it would have been nothing if I had had the tools. But in India, there are not markets where you can go and buy the tools for carpentry. The carpenters, it's not like a monopoly, but they're just, at that time, there was no market to buy the tools and to buy the fittings. There were a lot of the things they would make by hand. And the carpenters kept on saying, I'll come and come. And even now in India, it's really difficult to get a carpenter to come, but small job. They want a big job, and they're always busy. And this is the nature of Indian labor. So Prabhupada showed up. We did aarti for him. The first thing he did before even going to his room was to sit on the Vyasasana, and we did puja to him. He called me over during the puja and asked me, so when you get money, what do you do? then I showed Srila Prabhupada to his room. And came the evening, and there was no way that he could lock the door. So I didn't know what to do. What are you going to do in such a predicament? I was helpless. I didn't have tools, and I was feeling really horrible. So Srila Prabhupada looked at me. He says, "You lock me in the room and stand outside the door. And when I wake up in the morning, I'll knock and you unlock me." So I had the horrible duty of imprisoning Srila Prabhupada one night. So I slept outside his... I didn't actually sleep, I just laid there in a horrible feeling. I couldn't sleep. Then there was a knock from inside, Hare Krishna. And I unlocked Srila Prabhupada, and he went to our tiny little bathroom that we all shared with him. And I wanted to just stay there, so if this is, I said, "You go to sleep." That was a quite tumultuous visit. Srila Prabhupada, we were trying to get Jamuna to help us, and Jamuna is a wonderful devotee, but like all of us, sometimes we waiting for someone else to do it. And my wife and Jamuna were supposed to do it, and I guess nobody knew who was supposed to do it, even though they were supposed to do it. And Prabhupada was really getting upset that the deities had not been shifted. And he says, "Just see, you've invited Krishna but kept him at the gate." And he was really upset. And then he was upset at Jamuna. He says, "I asked you what you are doing, and you are saying someone else has this duty. We are not bureaucrats. I mean, in the service of Krishna, if we see something that's supposed to be done, it's not that we should point to someone and say, 'Oh, the temple president didn't ask me to do it.' No, it's common sense. We should take it on our responsibility when something essential not be done." So I mentioned that I would a charge of investigating this devotee for his stealing money. He actually was. One time he stayed in a Ashoka hotel, and he had no income, and he hadn't gotten any money from outside, and was staying in expensive hotels. Someone was giving him the room. And Srila Prabhupada was really upset. And I thought that, based on Srila Prabhupada's previous discussions with me, that we should always try to reform. I mentioned that Srila Prabhupada had looked at me one time, and he says, "That is your defect. You do not know how to reform them." And he continued to... This is one of the times he really scolded me. He didn't raise his voice. He says, "What is wrong with you anyway?" And I still can feel the pain of that. When Srila Prabhupada says, "What is wrong with you anyway? You just really... what is wrong with me? Why can't I do this? I try, but Krishna has... I have this defect." And Srila Prabhupada is asking me to do the thing which I am worst at in the world. I wanted to mention how frugal I was. Sarabhi Swami was our architect, and our budget was so meager, and my hands were tied with Srila Prabhupada always supervising what I did with money, and that maintenance had to come from my selling books, and I had very little time. And I gave Sarabhi Swami... It doesn't sound like a lot of money now, but in those days it was a lot of money, a budget of 3 rupees. 2 rupees for his auto rickshaw to go to the architects, for doing the architecture. Now we have bigger budgets for architects, but he got 3 rupees. 1 rupee was the fare to the architect and back, that was it. And 1 rupee for fruits. And actually, no one else got a rupee for fruits. I didn't eat fruits for years and years. We could not afford fruits. We could afford grains, and that was it. And we were just lucky. It was a great struggle to come up every month with the maintenance money for Vrindavan and for Delhi. The Vrindavan devotees were complaining about it, but they wouldn't send any money. And I also gave Shrabi a 300 rupee maintenance money for his wife, and I collected that extra. And I had no maintenance money from my family. That didn't make things better. But my wife was understanding with that. So in the meantime, this devotee, whose name I'm not mentioning, I had gotten delivered to our ashram a passbook from Punjab National Bank, and it was with several passbooks from the bank in altogether. And it didn't have a name on the outside of who it was for, and so I opened up the envelope and I saw that it was a passbook in the name of this devotee who I was trying to get him to reform rather than give a complete report to Prabhupada. And I wasn't withholding from Prabhupada, but I was trying to give him a chance. And I would go to Vrindavan on a second class, third class, unreserved train. And he was taking taxis with the money that I was collecting. Again, discrepancy. And I went to sleep, and then I felt someone grab me from my bed and lift me in the air and threw me outside the door. And then I was asleep, and so I just kind of fell into the garden, and then he picked me up and threw me across the garden. He was really enraged. "Why are you meddling in my affairs?" I guess some word had gotten to him. But Prabhupada didn't want him to know that he suspected him. So I was the one, I guess, that it was better me to get beaten up. And then he threw me across the garden again against the wall and kind of slid down the wall. Nothing broke, it was quite bruised. And then he got in the taxi and drove off again. So these are the types of things on Srila Prabhupada's behalf we had to endure. And I was really trying to be his good friend. So a lot of tribulations that went on. Amidst these agonies, we would have a lot of nectar from devotees as well. One quite angelic devotee showed up, Tribhuvanath. I don't know if you've heard of Tribhuvanath Prabhu. Such a gentle soul. He's from Ireland, no? And unlike most of the other devotees who were coming and going, Tribhuvanath came to me and said, "Prabhu, is there any way that I can help you?" And I said, "I can ask you, I don't know if you'll do it, but can you stay and help me to manage? I can't properly take care of the devotees because I have to go out." He says, "It will be my pleasure." And it was one of despite the other hardships of working with some devotees who would beat me up because I was trying to protect their relationship with Srila Prabhupada, Tribhuvanath was just perfect to work with. So one of the difficulties we faced that year was that when we calculated at the end of the year, Tribhuvanath stayed with me for 8 months, and we figured that during this year, 2,000 devotees had stayed with us. They'd come and they'd all have problems, visa problems, health problems. And I took it, even if a devotee was not cooperating and had ill health, I had to take care of this problem. So it was when Dr. R.N. Kataria, one devotee, came, and he was a rebel, Siddha Surupananda, and I knew that he was giving trouble to Srila Prabhupada personally and to the devotees, but he was sick, and so I took him to a doctor and, got the surgery donated and the hospital fees donated. So it didn't matter, even if they were semi-enemy, we had to take care of everybody. And so if someone was sick, we'd take care of their medical cares. If they got in legal troubles, we'd take care of that as well. Interesting events happened. And so as Tribhuvanath and I worked together, it was really fantastic to work again with someone who would just be the same with you as you are with them. We made a little introduction of everything you needed to do, a map and how to get every place and how to get your visa, the rules, the trains, a train schedule, how to get to the train, everything you needed to know. And the flyer was entitled, "Make Your Stay Short and Sweet, Clean and Neat." And they'd be greeted by Tribhuvanath with his disarming smile and his gentle disposition. And he says, "How long will you stay, Prabhu? How will you stay, Mataji? Okay, don't make it more than that." Tribhuvanath. Another devotee showed up, his name was Akrur. And I'll tell the story about Akrur. In April 11th of 1975, I had a child. With my wife had a child. She was born in Delhi in Dhanvantari Nursing Home. Srila Prabhupada came, and I believe it was Palika Mataji brought her to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada gave her the name Tejasini. It was kind of a little sarcasm on Srila Prabhupada's part, because my wife, she had this love-hate relationship with me, so whenever she'd say, have to say the name. And Prabhupada came again, and he asked me, what do you do? It was the money. The answer was the money. It's during Guru Puja. And then Prabhupada went to Vrindavan. I mentioned that I had only, you know, when Prabhupada came the next time, this was the time that Tejasini was born, and he gave her the name. I had the lock inside the room. That was all nice. And he called me in, and he was concerned with my health. I was always sick, and I was always working, and he would drive me harder. At the same time, I think as much as he drove me harder, he took really amazing care of me. And he was sitting me. And previous to this, I had heard that one should never use four. He had told me, I had heard from him, there are four things of the spiritual masters you should never use. Does anybody know this? The bed, the shoes, his asana, and his room. So I there was, you know, it was a room for Srila Prabhupada, and we had offered it to him, and whatever we come, I didn't want to have him not be there. So, but he said, no, he said, whenever I'm not here, I want you to use my room. He says, you're not healthy, you use my room. When he went to Vrindavan after being in Delhi, Tejasini was now 10 days old, and Mother Devashakti was holding him. And he was looking, he says, so this is your adopted daughter? And then she's just 10 days old. And he asked Devashakti, and is Tejasini dancing yet? Prabhupada enjoyed being with the children. Just eliminating a few things here. On the next visit, Srila Prabhupada came. We were organizing some programs with the members of Parliament. And for the Congress Party was ruling India, they really had a total majority. And I had mentioned that this was Srila Prabhupada's, one of his favorite, if not his favorite project in all of India, but in Delhi. This was very much important to him, and he had very much encouraged this. And I have to say, the agony and ecstasy of Delhi, I remember a prayer came into my mind that I made in my mind one day to Krishna, very early, and staying in smelly Delhi. It was a hell every day, and it was many difficulties. I'm giving you just a little bit of them. The insanities that I had to face. And but I remember praying to Krishna. I said, Krishna, there's so much nectar preaching in this hellish city. Maybe one day you'll be kind to me and there will no more be any sunset. The sun will shine 24 hours a day and people will no longer sleep so that I can just go door to door 24 hours. And I went to one, this Kamalapatri Pati, he was the guru of the Congress Party. Indira Gandhi treated him as her personal guru. And he was a very high class, high position Brahmin. And he arranged a program in his house, which was really prestigious. This is like probably the most prestigious program ever held for Srila Prabhupada, ever in India. Srila Prabhupada was so happy. He was talking about how Lord Chaitanya had made Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami into devotees. And rather than put Prabhupada in that small little room in Delhi, I arranged for him to stay at a very comfortable house, and also it would cultivate a member who was MP Jaipuri. He was an MP from Jaipur, and he was called Jaipuria of Jaipur, and he was MP Mahavir Prasad Jaipuria. So it's a little confusing. MP Jaipuria, MP. But he had a very nice house, and he treated Srila Prabhupada with great respect, and he was offering us land and also the money to build a Krishna Balaram temple in Jaipur. And our Krishna Balaram temple had already been completed and opened in April of 75, which I didn't talk about because we don't have enough time to discuss everything. So it was the evening of the program with Kamalapatri Pati, and I would always be going to the Prabhupada's room when I had free time or to report to him. And I had been in the room a couple of times in the morning. Even if I was there 5 minutes later, Prabhupada would ask me, "What news, Tejas?" So I didn't like to disturb him. I had the experience that he was so open and generous with his time that I could wander in his room and he was doing something else. And I'm pretty adept at sneaking around and not being seen, to the point that I frighten people who I stay with sometimes, you know, when someone else is in the room and they're standing next to you and you don't realize it. My friends and relatives hate me for that. They scream. And I actually, before I go in a room, I make some noise because I can move so silently. So I thought, well, let me use my silent ability and see what Srila Prabhupada is doing. And it was a room that had a door that had an opening on the bottom and an opening on the top, swinging doors, double doors. And so I kept my feet back and I was leaning so that I could see through the slots of the door, which is very little, to see what Srila Prabhupada was doing, hoping that if he was busy with something else, I would not disturb him and I'd come back a little later. He might be resting, and if he was resting and he knew I was there, he would interrupt his rest and not take his rest. And it was just embarrassing for me. It was charming, of course, but I really didn't, I didn't like to get that kind of charm. It really bothered me. So I looked through and he was saying Gayatri. So then I ducked back and I heard Srila Prabhupada says, "Ah, Tejas Prabhu." And I was thinking, I failed again. He's saying his Gayatri. So then I started to, when Srila Prabhupada calls you, you have to come. So I opened the doors and started coming, and I say, "Nama Om Vishnu Padaya." And as I'm going down, Srila Prabhupada still has his finger, his thumb around the thread, and he still has his finger exactly where it was. And I saw that he was looking at Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, a picture of him. "So, what news, Tejas Prabhu?" And I'm just bowing down, and you know, he's asking me, so I thought, should I just finish? But he was interrupting my obeisances. "Srila Prabhupada, the car is arranged for you to go to the program tonight, Vishnu Padaya Krishna Bastaya Bhutaday." And he says, "And then, who else is going to come on the program?" And went on like this. I just shortened it because of the lack of time. And I was partly hoping that he wouldn't ask me anything else, at least I could finish my obeisances. But it was all right. And finally, I was down on the ground, and we had our last conversation, and then I sat there, and he finished his Gayatri. But this is, you know, as I mentioned, Srila Prabhupada, I was the disciple, I mean, there are other disciples as well, who was very sensitive and to interrupt such an exalted person. And he knew that I didn't expect that he should give me any attention at all. I wasn't in need of that, like some persons were, and I was perfectly happy to sit outside the room. But almost converse to my desire, he would embarrass me and capture me with his love in this way. This is where I got the title for the book, "Captured, a Captive of Love." How can you go away from such a person who as soon as you come there and you're expecting to have no attention, he gives you nothing but his complete attention. I mentioned I was very sick. They kept on demanding more money from Vrindavan, but Prabhupada supported me. He wrote to them that 7,500 is no joke. So the Prabhupada continued to make visits regularly. And on the next visit, he stayed in his quarters. We had quarters upstairs in a building. We had rented another building on two floors. Because of a lack of space and money, Deva Shakti was in a room and Prabhupada had a room, and the hall was the accountant, and Madhira had a room where she was staying, and Prabhupada had towards the back quarters. Harisari came and tried to drive the two women away, and Prabhupada got really upset with him. He says, "This is their home. They've invited me into their home and you're driving them away." Of course, you know, they would have left, but you know, Prabhupada, he felt really upset. That's not in Harisari's book. I don't think so. There was something about me driving people away. But I didn't watch this all the time because I was coming and going, but I had an accountant named Krishna Swami, and he told me about it. And then so I watched, and Prabhupada, whenever he'd come up from the program, he'd first go, not to his room, he'd go to my wife's room and go in and talk to Tejasini, who at that time was 4 months old. And he'd just sit there and talk to her. And then he would poke her. And I watched this one day, and Krishna Swami affirmed to me that Prabhupada did this two times a day. He would go and look at her, and he would poke her in the belly. And little children, when they're that age, if you poke them, they grab your finger. So he would, his middle finger, his index finger, he would poke her in the belly till she would grab finger. And that age, they can't sit up. And so he would bring her to sitting position. And then he'd wiggle the finger, and then pull it out. And then she'd flop back down. And Prabhupada would raise his hand and laugh and look at the kid and laugh. And he'd do it again, you know. This was like, Prabhupada just was like, it was like so, Prabhupada would act so simple when he was, you know, maybe he knew we were watching him, maybe he didn't, but I think at that time I was successful at him not discovering that I was there. He just played with her. And I was really sick, and the Sakura Prabhu came, 45 days I had gone out and hadn't collected any money. I was really upset. I had paratyphoid and almost died. I didn't even know I was sick. I actually was preaching to Mrs. Kilnani, and I was so weak, I actually fell down. I actually collapsed. I fainted, and she actually caught me. And she said, you're burning up with fever. I said, well, there's no time to be sick. I had like 105 means what? What's the temperature you die at in Celsius? Huh? No, it's, what is it? 42? Whatever, it was just 1 degree below that. But pressure was on, and Akura Prabhu was there. Prabhupada had an idea how, you know, difficult it was, but I never told him very much. I was so sick that I couldn't get out. After this and other things, I had chronic colitis. I was so weak that I actually couldn't get up. I'm now a recurrence of this, but at that time I had a lot of adrenaline, so no matter how sick I was, I would still do it. And the pressure was on me to collect money to maintain Vrindavan. The opening was there, but still I had to collect to maintain them. They hadn't gotten off of my maintenance list yet. So Kura Prabhu would actually take me out of my chair and put my arm. He was so nice. He had been the top distributor in the world and in Europe for a couple of years, in the world 1 year. And he actually just, you know, took on this service of carrying me out of my chair and putting me in an auto rickshaw and then carrying me upstairs. And it was quite a pathetic scene. And I thought, well, I really look pathetic and it's real. So I couldn't even lift the Bhagavad Gita. And I still go out at 8 o'clock in the morning. He'd bring an auto and I'd go out with him. And he was really amazingly austere. So I figured, well, if I can't make a member in the ordinary way, let me people feel really sorry for me. You can use anything for Krishna. But I had another trick. Akrura, you know, he had a narrow German face, and he had a little bit harsh voice. And I said, you're a great preacher. I said, but if you don't mind, I'll do the presentation. And I'll do the presentation, and I'll be very gentle, and I'll be this sick person, which is real. We're not faking it. I said, but you do this one thing, is you look at them in the eye. And you don't smile, but you don't frown, and you don't look mean, but just look at them in the eye with no expression. And the whole time I'm talking, if they glance at you, don't be mean, but just look them in the eye. And you hold this life membership form. And when you hear the clue that perhaps you should become a life member, you hand them the form. Then I told him what he should say, so I would be doing this, and he would help. He had the pictures, and I couldn't even hold the pictures, and we had several different presentations, so he would change the pictures, and he would give them the books. And then this is what he would do, is he'd hand them the form, and then I would hand them the pen. I had a pen, which I had bought, actually, but I lied. And I said, someone gave me this pen, which is partly true. Someone had given me the money, and I bought the pen. I said, someone gave me this pen that whenever someone becomes a life member, they should sign with this pen. And they would get the sukriti of doing this. So I would hand them the pen. I was strong enough to hand the pen. And then he would give them the form, and he would stand up and tower over them. He wasn't that tall, but he would tower. They were sitting down. And he would move his face towards them, and he would say the first words he ever said, I think you should become the life member. It was really tough times, but we made a lot of members. But unfortunately, from the membership, nothing could go to maintenance. So. But it was nice. It was nice. So we're running out of time. I'll tell just one more story. The agony and ecstasy of being in the association of Srila Prabhupada by his choice, by his arrangement. He said, Jayatirtha came, and there was a whole succession of GBCs. Sannyasis were going and coming. If you read Shruti Kirti's book, you can read how the top sannyasis of a movement were there, and they couldn't endure being in India. And they couldn't taste the nectar of making the members either, which is really surprising to me, but they said, this is just mundane, we might as well be salesmen. I can't believe that they actually said these things, but I'm repeating. And all I knew is that Srila Prabhupada depended upon me, and even if I hadn't had such treatment for him, you know, he's my spiritual master, and if I give my word to anybody, I try to do my best. But here, you know, he had already endeared me so much. So I was a captive of his love, and you know, despite anything, I still went out. And Prabhupada, he never said anything to me about it except these little gestures of his, which were actually very frequent. He showed up from an overseas journey, and we offered him Guru Puja. And during the Guru Puja, he called me over, and he asked me, so... And they're offering flowers to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada's having me on his right side and having this conversation every time. So, when you get money, what do you do? And I knew it might be frustrating to him, but I had to say it correctly. I said, Srila Prabhupada, I put the money in the bank, and that was over. He says, and then? And what had happened is, because I was so weak, my new GBC, having some compassion on me, but also I think because I was the one giving 50%, and he didn't want to give 50%. Prabhupada put more pressure on him. So I think it was maybe 1-5% motivation from this. But actually, he was really concerned with me. He says, how are you going to collect maintenance money? You can't sell so many books because you're so weak. He says, just give 1/3. Nobody is even giving 25%. And you're giving all the money to construction fund. And most of them are taking 3/4 of the money for maintenance. And you're taking no money. He says, how long are you going to do this? You know... It's very difficult. So just give you keep 1/6 for maintenance. That will help you to, you know, get your 10,000 rupees, which was a lot of money in those days. So I said, no, Srila Prabhupada, he asked us to give 50%, even without his asking me to give 50%, I'm doing it, and he always wants to know if I'm doing it. And I said, he's going to ask me, and I said, even if he doesn't ask me, I have to give the 50%. He says, no, no, no. Prabhupada said, an emergency. I said, well, I'm not, you know, I said, I still have to do it. And I normally resisted this for, and it went on, and he visited me again. And, you know, I could feel he meant well for me, and somehow I gave in. And on that month, I gave 1/3 to BBT. All the other temples weren't giving any money. They were in debt. We had huge credit with BBT, huge credit. And we had, at that time, 5 rooms filled with books that were all paid for. In the movement, very few temples were like that. But I just followed Prabhupada's formula, and I was selling a lot of books because I had to. To maintain, and then whatever I sold, I gave that money plus an extra 50% on top of that. So I had this huge credit from BBT, a lot. So, but I gave in, and then I told Srila Prabhupada, I gave 1/3 to BBT. Prabhupada's eyes opened, and he didn't yell at me, but I already knew I would feel horrible. I knew this moment was coming. And he says, call Brahmananda after Guru Puja. We have to discuss this. So we're running out of time, but Srila Prabhupada had me sit there and he went over the reasons. He said, you know, he said our whole movement is based on the principle of distributing books. Books are our movement. He said, I started this life membership program only for the purpose of distributing our books. And he says, then he told me his history again. That he had told me at a certain time he had this fantastic business in Allahabad, and he went bankrupt simply because of lack of a capital. He says, everything, business runs on capital. This is our capital asset. And then he told me something I hadn't known. He says, besides, you know, I have written a letter to all of the temples in the movement that they should give 50%, and I gave you a name that they should follow your example. And honestly, that letter, there's nowhere in the archives, but Srila Prabhupada told me about it. And I had no idea that Prabhupada had actually put me up as his 50% man, you know. Just as an incident, before I tell you what happened at the end, in my childhood, my father, and I didn't think about this and never tell Srila Prabhupada, but my father had taught me math before I was 4, and he taught me how to make money as part of the math thing. And I was just not even 4 years old, and I made my first dollar. That was in 1950. So a dollar is a lot of money. And I did it with someone else's money. It's not enough time to tell how I did it. But what was amazing was not that. That I consider very ordinary. But what was amazing was what my father told me. And it's a fantastic lesson. My father told me, my son, you should know that whatever you get in life is the grace of God. Imagine, Krishna gave me such a special father that he had never mentioned God before and he never mentioned God again, but this is enough. That whatever you get in life is the grace of God. This is the whole summary of the Vedas. And he said, and therefore, you should use at least half in his service. And my father was such an amazing man, so gracious. He said, if you like, you can decide the proper way to use it in his service, or if you like, I can give you a suggestion. So this was the background, and I actually never specifically thought about it till writing this book, that somehow or other there was a connection. So Prabhupada said, I wrote to all the temples that you should follow this example. So it felt perfectly natural to me to be a 50% person because this is what my father taught me. And although I couldn't do it very much, I was very happy when I was able to do this in Krishna consciousness movement. And then Prabhupada said, so, are you going to do this now? And I had never not wanted to do it. It was just a moment of weakness. And I said, yes. He said, so, even if you die, even if you starve to death, "Will you promise me that you will do this?" So I said, "Yes, Srila Prabhupada." So I'll leave you with this as the ending of what fortune I received, what special mercy from Srila Prabhupada, by which no matter how far I run, the noose is around me, around my heart. Now Prabhupada put me in this agony and ecstasy of service, to personally serve Krishna and to directly serve the exalted personality A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Thank you all very much for tolerating my speaking today, and forgive me from any offenses to any devotee at all. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.